This is the Inch Podcast, a production of InsideCollegeHockey.com. Now, let's send it to our podcast host, Joe Gladyszewski.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Inch Podcast. My name is Joe Gladyszewski, editor and ECAC Hockey senior writer. Pleased to bring in our regular cast of characters and another first-time podcaster. We'll start by introducing Hockey East writer Kevin Zeese. Kevin, welcome to the podcast.
Pleasure to be here, guys.
Looking forward to your insights tonight and throughout the season. Also, special guest of the Inch Podcast, Mike Eidelbus. Hello, Bus.
I had to clear a lot of stuff off my schedule for this, so thanks for accommodating me.
You got it. CCHA senior writer James V. Dowd. JVD, what is up?
It's hot.
For those who might have not heard the first podcast edition, James now working out of the U.S. Virgin Islands, so he gets that hockey weather. Just chills your bones and gets you.
I actually had a Michigan Tech hockey shirt on the other day, and somebody told me I was at the wrong rink.
That's tremendous. And, of course, WCHA senior writer Jess Myers. What's up?
Hi, guys. It's not hot here in Minnesota, but it's hockey weather. We'll take it.
All right. Speaking of Minnesota, the state's university main campus hockey club has a pretty good squad this year.
They do have a nice squad this year, ranked number one by everyone who matters right now. And I was at practice today. They, you know, are quick to point out that there is no trophy awarded for being ranked number one on Veterans Day. So they're downplaying it as they should. Don Lucia said it's mostly a matter of them winning a couple games and a couple teams ahead of them losing games, which is kind of how this game works, I guess. But be that as it may, you know, undefeated in WCHA play so far and 9-1 overall, and they're building up a nice cushion of points in the WCHA standings, which can't hurt you come later in the season. Most impressive about it is, you know, most of their winning has been on the road. They've gone to Minnesota Duluth and won a couple. They've gone to Alaska Anchorage and won a couple. This weekend they go to Wisconsin for what is turning out to be a pretty big series, and especially so for Wisconsin, which is now 4-5-1, and you know they're at risk of falling quickly out of the race if they don't start picking up some points themselves.
What do you like best about that Gopher team right now? You've seen them the most. I've seen a couple games on TV.
Well, I guess, you know, it has to start with Kent Patterson. You can't argue with a guy who got 5 shutouts in his first 9 games. This is, you know, someone who came into this senior year without a college shutout and has already tied the school single season record for shutouts with 5. One more and he will eclipse Rob Stauber, who also had 5 the year he won the Hobie, I believe. But what Patterson does for that team most of all is they've got a pretty young defensive core, and they don't have, you know, that prototypical star Gopher defenseman in the Paul Martin or Eric Johnson or Keith Ballard mold, a guy who's going to rush the puck. And by having the confidence they do in Patterson, it's allowing them to develop that more quickly. It's allowing the defenseman to do more offensively and take more risks.
Yeah, Ben Marshall kind of stood out to me in a couple plays he made. Was he the guy that Aaron Ness was supposed to be?
He's Aaron Ness with a little more meat on his bones, maybe. But, you know, a guy like him, a guy like Nate Schmidt, obviously, you know, those are key players. Looking at their forwards, the guy that has stood out the most for me, I mean, Kyle Rau is grabbing the headlines, and we all knew he was going to be a good player. If you watched his brother Chad play at Colorado College, or if you watched Kyle play in high school, you knew he was going to do some fun things. The guy that nobody knew about is Sam Warning, who is out of the St. Louis area and is a freshman, and has just had a lot of fun on that second line, and is, I think, a real source of something to grow on for the offense.
Yeah, it's a nice group so far. We'll see how they hold up. Like you were saying.
And you mentioned the defense having a little bit of an advantage or kind of getting easing into this to the season because of Patterson. Well, you might say the opposite, that, you know, the teams that the Gophers play have to get have to get back in their own end because they're seeing wave upon wave of guys coming after them.
Minnesota has the puck a lot.
Yeah, those two forward lines, especially those top two forward lines that they have, are pretty darn good. In fact, that top line probably is playing better than any top line or any line in the country at this point in time, with Holland, Bukestad, and Budish.
Yep. You know, Budish, obviously, you know, the big thing for him is being healthy. He's missed two of the last three seasons with various injuries. The scooter accident last year, and then his senior year of high school, he got hurt in a football game and missed the entire year of high school hockey. So, you know, not only for him being healthy, but not playing, you know, like he doesn't want to get hurt. I mean, he still is going out there with reckless abandon, and that's a very good thing to have on that forward line.
Actually, it's Rau's on that line with Bukestad and Budish. But, you know,
yeah, Budish. Okay, yeah.
Hala, yeah. With
Hala is with who is he with? Is he with Condon and...
Let me look at their most recent line chart.
Warning and Hansen from their Saturday game against North Dakota.
Okay.
Well, yeah, they've got good depth in their forwards. But yeah, as you're saying, Jess, they got three sophomores, two freshmen, and a junior are their defense core right now.
Yeah. Yeah, so, young defensive core, and not, you know, Don Lucia says it's not the prototypical type that wants to join the play every time. But, you know, what he's seen of them... He said we want to start getting a fourth guy more involved in the offense, and that's something they're going to work on. And they have the luxury to do that with the way Patterson has played.
They haven't needed to do that through thus far, however. I mean, yeah. The forwards have been doing just fine. Yeah. You know, the other thing that's kind of nice, you know, you talk about Rau being a freshman, and he has been great. But, you know, it must be nice for a 5'8 guy to be out there with Bukestad, who goes, what, about 6'4", 6'5".
Right.
And Budish, who's about 6'3", 220. You know, Rau is going to find himself having plenty of room out there.
Well, yeah, he plays with Mariucci.
Yeah, well, there's that.
I couldn't even wait to get that in there.
Yeah, exactly. There's always plenty of room out there. Albert Hainsworth would have plenty of room out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, with those two guys, you know, he's going to find himself with a lot of space.
Playing five of their next six on the road, so obviously an interesting stretch here for the Gophers. Two at Wisconsin, a home-and-home with St. Cloud State, and then a pair at Michigan State. So,
Memories of the old college hockey showcase.
Yeah,
they don't play that anymore, but just to kind of keep up appearances, they're gonna go to East Lansing for a pair.
They may be in the same conference soon.
Yeah,
I've heard rumors to that effect.
It's funny, Gladdy, because I was thinking about Minnesota coming here in a couple weeks, coming to East Lansing, and I got to thinking about were you at that game? I think it was in 2001 or 2002 as part of the showcase when Minnesota was one and Michigan State was two, or vice versa. And it was a 4-4 tie, and it was I want to say Ryan Miller was a junior, and I think it was the year Minnesota won the first of their two titles, and that was just a real entertaining game, and I you know, maybe this is setting up to be something similar for the Gophers, where they come here and they have a great weekend, and they end up kind of finishing in 2012, where they did in 2002. So that I just remember that game today, and just remembered, you know.
You know, I think I was there.
It was a Sunday afternoon. I remember that.
Oh, you know what? I might have only gone to the Friday night game. I don't know.
I'm looking at the summary. Gopher goals by Brett McKinnon, Grant Patolny, Eric Wendell, and Barry Tallickson. With the tying goal late.
The Condor.
Oh. Adam Hauser battling Ryan Miller.
Yeah. There's two names you'll never say in the same sentence.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I remember that game.
Yeah, I must have been, Bus. That was the year of the Cold War, right?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I must have been. I know I went out to the showcase on those odd years quite a bit through that stretch.
By the way, for equal time, Michigan State goals from back when they could score goals.
Sean Patchell.
Brian Maloney, however.
Of course.
Assisted by Mike Lalonde and Duncan Keith. Adam Hall scored a goal. Joel Goodenow scored a goal.
Goody.
And Jim Slater.
With a second assist by Brock Radunsky, one of my favorite names.
That almost sounds like the Cold War.
Yeah.
Duncan Keith, Jim Slater, and Adam Hall with the points.
Yeah. What were you, like 10 for that, Dowd?
Something like that.
were you there on your official visit?
I just, you know, it's funny, like, thinking about how long ago that seems to me, because I was, you know, I was 15 years old, something like that, so. What year was that? 16.
Yeah.
I was in high school.
It's funny you mention official visit, because I think every kid in the country took their official visit to that game.
Yeah, exactly.
For one team or the other, or both.
Yeah, there were a couple or both.
Yeah.
I mean, that was pretty awesome. That was really, really impressive. So,
you know, it's amazing that idea hasn't taken off, and they don't have more of those.
Yeah, why didn't anybody try?
Should do that soon.
Why wouldn't someone try to replicate it?
Well, Tom Anastas once told me that it was when they did it the first time, it was like trying to launch a space shuttle.
Yeah, I bet.
Now it's easy when Michigan does it.
The first time was trying a lot.
All right.
We're deteriorating.
Yeah.
Too early.
Yeah. Anything else on the Gophers? WCHA thoughts, Jess?
Get well soon, Drew LeBlanc.
Yeah, my Huskies.
Sad deal for your Huskies. And a good kid. I mean, Drew's mother actually worked in the UMD athletic department when I was in school there, so I've known his family for a while. Good people and straight A student, like was noted in our first shift this week, and just tough thing to see for him. But you know, those are literally the breaks of the game. You know, it wasn't anybody's fault. It's just one of those goofy plays that happens.
Yeah.
And shout out to Rocco Grimaldi for that first collegiate goal of his. Just a heck of a snipe. The defense gave him a little room, and he took advantage of it. And you can see that kid's going to make a little bit of money with the Florida Panthers someday.
He'll play on Sundays.
Yes.
We'll circle back a little later. I want to talk about some of this series coming up this weekend and some of the question mark teams. I think that's the bust if you want to get started on the forecast. A lot of proving ground games this weekend. We'll get to that a little more. Kevin, wanted to talk about a team about 2 weeks ago when we last got together for the podcast. New Hampshire was off to a slow start, but has turned things around since then. What are you hearing from those parts?
Basically, they've seemed to finally kind of start putting things together a little bit. They've got a real young defensive core out there, and they're playing a freshman and two sophomores, and with a young group like that, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. And you know, that was one of the things they were doing early, was a lot of kind of bad giveaways in front of the goal there. And you know, when you open up against BU, Northeastern, and BC, those aren't exactly teams that are going to allow you to get away with those kind of mistakes. So, you know, I think they've figured out a little bit and tightened up on their defensive end and made a couple changes up front with their lines that have paid off, and all of a sudden you get four wins in a row and five unbeaten, and now you're back to 500 after a real slow start. So,
yeah, good atmosphere there Saturday for the game against Maine, as it always is.
Always, yes. Now they, you know, back at the start of their sort of turnaround, if you can kind of call it that a little bit. Back in October 21, they moved Nick Sorkin, the sophomore, over to center on the top line along with Stevie Moses. And they've kind of had a little bit of a revolving door at left wing, but it seems like whoever they've put there has produced. Kevin Gumas has played a couple games there. Grayson Downing's there. Dalton Spielman's been there for a couple. And each of those three guys, I mean, it doesn't seem to matter who's on that top line with Sorkin and Moses, but, you know, they're all seemingly to find a way to put the puck in the net. So,
yeah. For those of you who don't know much about Nick Sorkin, we'll just sum it up this way. He's that next, that UNH guy who has 5 points his freshman year and then goes for 50 his next 3 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, played 35 games as a freshman, had 5 points. He's already got 11 in 9 games this year. So he might be the next in line of that UNH tradition that's just amazing to me every year. They seem to find these guys and develop them, and that's a credit to the staff up there.
And that always seems to be the annual question with UNH is, you know, we lost so much with last year's senior class, who's going to step up and replace them? And, you know, when I talked to UNH head coach Dick Umiliani over the summer, he mentioned, you know, like, that's not a concern for them because somebody inevitably always steps up. And it's just a matter of figuring out who it's going to be and getting the guys in the roles and letting them kind of do their thing. And Sorkin seems to be one of those guys that stepped up, and he's, you know, you hate to say he's making everybody else around him better with his play, and away they go.
Yeah, that's good stuff.
It's kind of funny how they started and they got off to a slow start. And you mentioned the defensive struggles that they had. But to go along with that is, you know, a goalie who's a really good goalie in Matt DiGirolamo. He wasn't exactly on top of his game either. And then they played Union, beat him in overtime 2-1. Obviously, Union's a very good team. Beat him at home, and they were outshot about almost, well, it wasn't almost 2-1. It was about 40-25, I think, that they were outshot. But DiGirolamo has a big game for him, and then all of a sudden they catch fire. So, you know, he got off to a slow start, but then he had a nice outing where he kind of, you know, kept him in the game, and they got the offense going, and they scored in overtime to win 2-1, and now they're rolling.
Yeah, and those aren't exactly wins over, you know, some of the weaker teams. I mean, as you mentioned, you know, beating Union's a top ECAC hockey team there, and you know, Northeastern UMass has had a couple of surprising results so far this year, and you know, obviously whenever you've got a rivalry game like that UNH main contest last Saturday, that's doesn't matter what the teams are doing that year, it's always going to be a tough, hard-fought game, and you know, they were able to pull that out in front of their home crowd there.
Yeah. Saw Bobby Butler tonight, watched a little bit of the Senators and Rangers, a little UNH flashback.
I was going to say, speaking of surprising results, if you could bet on college hockey, and I, who knows, somewhere you probably can.
I gotta go.
When it comes to Boston University, I think I would just keep my money in my pocket because who knows what's going to happen with that club.
Yeah, pay your bills first before you consider doing it with the Terriers. Yeah,
they get. Absolutely, you know, the first game of the year they shut out New Hampshire. They go to Providence and lose. Beat Denver, lose to Holy Cross, and then they get throttled by Lowell.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know. I don't know what that says about them.
There's a lot more talent on that team than the results that they are putting up.
They got the big Sunday afternoon showcase game this week.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, they do.
I'll probably watch some of that.
Maybe what about caught whatever Minnesota had the last couple of years?
Yeah.
What about Merrimack? Are they for real?
I think yes.
I agree. It doesn't seem to matter who they throw out there, and they seem to have to really have built that program correctly. Past seasons, everybody's kind of looked at that team as the Stefan DaCosta show, but that team is solid from the goal all the way out.
Yeah, I wrote this in the power rankings note. They've given up 10 goals this entire season. 10.
Wow.
And they know how to score a few.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I think that they're...
Yeah, it's a big weekend for BU. They've got
they've got Merrimack and Boston
Merrimack
College.
Merrimack and BC. So maybe we'll learn a little more about the Terriers this week.
Or too much.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing about Merrimack, I mean, you know, here they sit with a 7-0-1 record through eight games, but their schedule really lightens up. I mean, they have one game this weekend, then they don't play the next weekend, the 19th and 20th. They've got a midweek game against Alabama Huntsville, and then two with Providence and one with Vermont. I mean, but that's between now and December 7th, which is a month. They've got five games. So
they get Colgate and Union right after that, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, they almost
have it. You know, I should go. I'll go to that game, December 10th at Colgate.
They almost have it sort of broken into thirds with their season this year. They've got this little quasi-fall break where they can kind of take a little bit of time to evaluate where they're at and get their guys rested and healed up before that that next little break there. And then, you know, you take a break for Christmas and then come back and you get your stretch run. So,
yeah, they start January with BU, BC, Maine, New Hampshire. So,
yeah, that's pretty good.
Those are the Blue Bloods. You know, if they want to be a part of that, and as they've proven, you know, they certainly are in the top half of that league. They can restate their claims for that again right there in January. So
5-0-1 is a nice start in that league.
That's yeah, nice. Yeah. Like Jess, you were saying that, you know, they can't take those points away with the Gophers that have earned. And certainly I think that's even more valuable in Hockey East, you know.
You know, the challenge for the WCHA teams was not let CC and Denver get too far ahead of you. You know, in the case of Minnesota or in the case of, you know, some of the Hockey East teams, that's the same challenge is, you know, stay within striking distance.
Yeah. So
Merrimack seems to me, and I haven't seen them play this year. I saw them a couple times last year. But just seems to me like a team that they're not going to be prone to going in a prolonged funk. You know, they've got obviously a good goaltender and they've got some pretty good defensemen and they've got great balance up front. I mean, it just doesn't, you know, it seems like they can win in some, they can win a 2-1 game or they can win a 6-4 game. It just, to me, does not seem like the kind of team that is really gonna at some point in the season just go into a tailspin and maybe lose 6-7 in a row, barring injury, I should say. Yeah. That might be the only thing that would send them spiraling, but they just...
Three of their top four scorers are seniors. So, you know, they've got that veteran presence and leadership there too. You know, last year wasn't a fluke. This is how we did it. Come on, boys, let's go. So that you have that element as well. So good stuff there. One of the teams that's kind of stood out a little bit, I guess, in ECAC hockey is also there in the state of New Hampshire, Dartmouth, as I guess we shouldn't have been surprised to see, but only two teams came out of the opening weekend of conference play with two wins. Dartmouth, of course, was one of them, and Union was the other. You know, we were probably a little higher on Dartmouth than some other folks were in our preseason rankings and where we have them in our inch power rankings. Just, I think that's a team that can go, you know, that's been a fragile team in the past that can beat anybody and then can go into a bit of a, you know, a couple weekends where you're scratching your head a little bit, but so far so good for Dartmouth. So we'll be keeping an eye there. And then they've got Cornell and Colgate this weekend at home, so that'll be a nice opportunity for them.
What else you got in ECAC hockey?
I probably should mention
Rensselaer a little bit.
Yeah, RPI, the results haven't been there. They played a very difficult schedule out of league. But I think, you know, and they've had some some pretty key injuries to guys like Marty O'Grady and Brock Higgs. Some people wondered about their goaltending situation. That certainly has not been the problem. But I think they're trying to figure out a little bit. They got a lot, an awful lot out of that senior class last year, and not only in terms of point production, but reliability, leadership, and maybe some people need to find where they fit in terms of those roles. I think that's the team identity might be the biggest problem there right now. And Union's good. Union's real good.
Yeah. No big deal for Rensselaer, even though they've lost, what, 6 in a row? But they play Yale on Friday, and then on Tuesday they play Union, so.
Yeah, that tough schedule thing, we're sticking with that.
Yeah.
Yale got a little bit of a lesson Friday night. They lost to Cornell. It was a televised game. Cornell won 6-2. But a lot of what guys were saying after that game was that they had to play harder. They had to play dirtier. You know, Yale will look for that backdoor pass and make that extra pass for a goal, highlight goal. But they have to get back to getting grinding it out a little more. So we'll see what they've got. And then, so we will see what happens with those teams. The Colgate, Cornell, Dartmouth, Harvard travel partner crossover this weekend, I think, is the one to watch for sure. Still trying to learn a little bit about Colgate, but they're pretty good. So, yeah, we're just still learning a little bit here on those teams.
I would like to know a little bit more about Clarkson.
Big-time power play so far. Karpowicz has been great in goal for them. And I think they've got some fresh energy there after the coaching change. And... yeah, there you go. I mean, 13 power play goals in 10 games for them. You know, out of 33 total goals. So that's a good way to get her going. They're on the road. They really haven't played much on the road. They opened at Alaska, played Bentley twice. Now they're at Quinnipiac and Princeton. So
I'm actually looking at their schedule. And yeah, they're basically on the road for the next 2 months.
Yeah, they got Harvard, Dartmouth, 18-19, and then
Maine, Holy Cross, Colgate, Cornell, St. Lawrence.
St. Lawrence isn't a road game.
Well,
they walk to the rink.
Yeah. Then they play them in Lake
Placid. Lake Placid. I think I'm going to go to that.
And they go to Florida. No, you can't, because that's the same day as that other game.
I'm going to opt for two chill Merrimack games over Colgate Merrimack, I think.
I don't know.
We'll see.
All right.
You're our special guest assignment editor. You can send me where I need to be. So that'll be good.
Yeah.
Who
are we missing? CCHA.
Let's talk about Air Force a little bit. Ken McMillan, great, obviously contributions every week with this coverage of that league, and he had a story about their goaltending situation, and just said something that caught your eye.
Yeah, you know, and it what really underscored it to me at Gopher practice day, I was talking to Tom Ceratori and said, "Hey, how's your dad's team doing?" And he said, yeah, they're doing really good despite the fact that they lost their goalie. And, you know, I went and crunched the numbers and looked at Ken's stuff a little bit. Yeah, Jason Torf, who is a sophomore and who was going to be the number one guy. I mean, you talk about a bad opening weekend of the season. They go out to Grand Forks for the icebreaker. They lose third period leads twice, getting beat by North Dakota and by Michigan State. They lose their top goaltender, and since then, they are 5-0-2 and have put things together. They've won a couple of road games at Alabama-Huntsville. The rest of them have been at home. They won and tied at Alabama-Huntsville. But kind of a makeshift defensive crew there. And Stephen Capel, who's a senior, has stepped in and is doing the job. A good saves percentage, good goals against. So nice little recovery at Air Force, which is obviously not a place where you're looking to call up a walk-on or anything like that. It's not a place where guys enroll just hoping they might make the hockey team.
Yeah, 181 goals against for Capel in 7 games.
That'll work. I was looking to actually, before we brought this up, I was looking at their schedule. They're at RIT and Mercyhurst this week. And obviously, the Air Force RIT rivalry has grown into a pretty good one. But the game with Mercyhurst, they're actually 1-2, I think, in Atlantic Hockey right now, if I'm not mistaken. Granted, Air Force has played a couple more games, but Mercyhurst is right there with them. I know it's kind of early to talk about this stuff in the standings, but as we've said a couple times before, they don't take the points away from you. So,
unless there's a major violation.
Well, there's that.
Plus, remember when Colt McCoy was at Texas and they said that was just the perfect name for a Texas quarterback?
Yes.
Is there a better name in college hockey than the leading scorer at Air Force named Cole Gunner?
Yeah, that does fit.
Freshman out of Richfield, Minnesota, and he's got 2 goals and 10 assists so far for the Falcons. So
he's more of a passer. Not so much a gunner.
Yeah, whatever works.
Sounds like he's loading the shells more than firing them, but hey, it works for me.
Yeah, that Mercyhurst team, they had a tough start. They lost their first 4 games at Nebraska, Omaha, and against Robert Morris, those both in the Omaha Stampede, and then went up to the Alaska Gold Rush and lost to both Alaska schools. And then, you beat RIT in Cornell on the same weekend, and that'll give you some confidence. So. Mm-hmm. Mercyhurst, and then this is the start of they've played 2 out of a 6-game homestand here, so that's a team that is seizing their chances, I think, at the right time. And they're also in the College Hockey Showcase because they play at Wisconsin on Thanksgiving week.
So. Very nice.
Yeah, Dowd. I mentioned earlier. Proving ground or information gathering weekend, however you want to look at it, and there's a lot of CCHA teams that we think are pretty good. We're not sure there's a top dog yet, and I think Ferris and LSU Lake State are two of those teams that we're kind of curious about right now.
Yeah, that's a pretty big series. I think Ferris. Only 2 conference losses so far. Those were both on the road at Yost. It can be a tough place to play, although they were pretty convincing for Michigan. But other than that, they've won everything. They've played pretty well. They've got a good good special teams, which is good because they commit a lot of penalties. But then you look at Lake Superior, and also sitting on top of the conference right now. They lost to Bemidji State in overtime this past weekend, but their only conference loss was a 1-goal loss to Bowling Green. But they really haven't played anybody yet. So I think this is a good, maybe proving ground. But then again, do we come out of the weekend and say, okay, well, Lake Superior beat Ferris, or Ferris beat Lake Superior? Is the other team real? But I think it's a good weekend to get a judge so far. Even though we don't really have a good feel for either one of these teams, it's the first time they've really played anybody that can really challenge them to this point.
I think I was feeling similarly about Western Michigan and they proved, I think, enough to me with the split at Yost last weekend. That's a pretty good team.
I mean, they get 2 ties on the road at Union, and Union's a great team. They beat Northern Michigan twice, and Northern Michigan's off to a pretty good start, and then they split at Michigan. I think Western Michigan's got all the pieces in place. Everything we saw last year, I think, Bus, you've said to me on a number of occasions, really the question we had was who could step up for Jerry Kuhn and step in net and carry this team on their back, and they've proven they got a couple guys who might be up to the task, and so they've got some dynamic offensive players. They've got a really, really good defensive core. You know, I think we tend to talk about them positively and rate them, but maybe underrated nationally. They've got the ability to keep pucks out of the net. They've got the ability to score goals on everybody. You know, I feel really good about Western Michigan.
You know, the one thing that really sticks out for me from last weekend, and I think they needed to win at Michigan. Hasn't been a great place for them. Hasn't been a great place for a lot of teams. But I think they've maybe won, prior to last weekend, won 12 or 13 games there.
Yeah, that's correct.
It just was not a great place for them. So they come out on Friday, they get two goals, and they're leading. Michigan comes back with two goals in the second to tie it. And then for Western to come back, they score in the third with less than a minute left, about 57 seconds left, get the game winner. You know, I think that was real important for them. You know, not just winning at Yost, but the way they won. You know, they squandered an early lead, but still, I think in the past, in the old Western, well, first of all, they probably wouldn't have been in that position to begin with. But they would have found a way to lose that game. So for them to find a way to win that game and keep battling and ultimately get that goal to win it, I think will bode well for them from here on out. I think that was a good confidence win, regardless of whatever happened on Saturday. I think that you know, they're going to point to that win at Michigan and really use that to build on from here on out.
You know, I think what I like about Western Michigan is they have some confidence, but it's a healthy confidence. Like, they still fear other opponents, so they go into a weekend knowing we got to play our best game to beat this team. And you know, sometimes when teams are upstart or they, you know, they start to win some games and become more prominent nationally, they start to believe in themselves too much, and then we see them fall flat on their face, which is one of the reasons I think we talk about you know, early season rankings being less meaningful than the end of season ones. You see a team get out to a hot start, then they run into a good team, and it's over. You know, Western, they have a healthy respect for everybody they play, and I think that that's reflected in how serious they take every weekend, and they have, I guess, the right amount of doubt that they've got the right amount of confidence, but also the right amount of doubt, so they get into their play hard, play Western Michigan hockey every weekend. The thing I really am interested to get a feel for as the year goes on is, you know, how does this team's personality change under Andy Murray versus Jeff Blashill? I think, you know, Blash came in there last year and really, like, you know, took no nonsense, held them to a really high standard and, you know, and really pushed it. And I think the team took on that personality. Andy Murray's a much different personality, but it's got a lot of great experience. You know, I asked him last week, hey, you're coaching at Yost for the first time. What do you think about it? It's a hostile place. And he said, oh, you know, it's a nice place. Made a crack about how he'd been up there for the Western Michigan-Michigan football game and saw the scoreboard and thought that Jerry Jones had bought the arena. But, you know, he said, you know, Yost is only, you know, it's only an intimidating place and a scary place if you play badly there. You know, if you go out there and set the tone, you know, you can make it your own and take advantage of it. And that's kind of what they did, even though they let it slip away Friday night. So, I think, you know, Jeff Blashill's enthusiasm and, you know, and his, you know, his setting of the tone last year, it's very different than what Andy Murray will do, but Andy Murray's like maturity and experience at all different levels of hockey is really going to pay off for this team.
He'll be able to bring, a good amount of poise and perspective, I think, to their season at some point that will be valuable to them.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing, and you kind of touched on it a little bit about them having some confidence but not being too overly confident in their abilities. That seems kind of like an, you know, it can be maybe construed as a little bit more of an NHL mindset as far as, you know, I mean, you got to be confident in your abilities, but, you know, it's a job. You got to go out there and do your job for 60 minutes, and then, you know, you don't get too high, you don't get too low. You know, granted, there are going to be ups and downs, but, you know, in the end, it's one game or it's one weekend. It's, you know, it's there's a big picture to look at, and it seems like I am interested to see how that influence will affect where they go from here on out.
Yeah, I think, you know, in talking to Andy Murray, you know, he'll talk about his experience in the NHL pretty openly and not in, you know, not bragging, not trying to put it out there, but he's just trying to find, you know, he's learning about the college game and learning about coaching the college game and coaching young men that are this age and, you know, trying to bridge that gap. So he really is trying to bring in the best of what you can learn in the NHL, which is what you're talking about, you know, taking it a game at a time and all that. And I think he's also learning from these guys how the college game works. He's had some sons that have played the game and at the college level and that, but really getting a feel for that. So I think it's a good learning experience for both sides. And I think, when it comes to February, March and, you know, February, March, we'll really, really get a feel, for how productive a relationship that could be.
Do we know much about Ohio State yet?
You know, you know, talking to Coach Osiecki this summer, he felt good about what was going on there. He felt good that – I think the team when he took it over was further away than maybe he thought when he interviewed for the job once he got to see these guys. But, again, you know, a little bit like Lake Superior, they, you know, they played pretty well against Notre Dame. But other than that, they played Michigan State and Alaska. They're both struggling. And Alabama, Huntsville – you know, I think these next few weeks they play Michigan, Lake Superior, and then Miami. That's going to be a really good test for them. And I think in another 3 or 4 weeks we'll know if those efforts that Coach Osiecki has put into turning things around off the ice in the weight room and then in practice on the ice and getting that to translate to the game, he really went back to the ground level. So I don't know that he's expecting to see results, you know, so quickly. He's really trying to do things from the bottom level up. I think we'll have a better idea in 6 or 8 games.
Process right now.
I think he's got two things working in his favor. First is Cal Heater, who's a pretty good goalie that does not get a lot of recognition. But he, you know, he was good for them last year.
Got two pretty good goalies.
Yeah, they do. Heater's the main guy.
Yes.
And they've got the UNH transfer. I think this is his second season at Ohio State, Danny Dries.
Yes. Yep.
And he's, you know, he's got 7 goals through 10 games, which isn't, it's not too bad. So they, yeah, I mean, and he's a senior, so, you know, obviously he's you know, he's been around. So they got some nice veterans to build around, and or at least a good solid veteran goalie, a good solid goal scoring veteran up front, and you know, they've got some young kids too that are that'll really come in and develop for them.
Well, and I think those young kids are a key part of it, the freshmen and sophomores, because that's who he can mold into the type of players that he wants and the type of system he wants. You know, some of the older guys who were recruited by Markle and played for Markle, you know, maybe that, you know, there's, you know, you see this anytime there's a coaching change where
you've
got
the upperclassmen. Well, you mean recruited by Casey Jones and
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, okay. I do mean recruited by Casey Jones. But
okay, let's just get that. All right.
Yeah.
All right.
Oh, I was going to make another point about Heater. Speaking of, there's another great hockey name for you.
Yeah.
By the way,
absolutely.
Cal Heater. You know, for a team last year, they were 3 games under 500 at 15-18-4. Heater had a 923 save percentage, 230 goals against. And that's pretty good goaltending.
Yeah, that's not your problem.
No, and they were +3 in goals, in goal margin. So the margin for error was not very big either.
Right. I think, you know, and that's a league, you know, still trying to figure out some things about some people, but with Miami off to a slow start, and then some other teams, you know, Alaska off to a slow start, you know, you can get into a top four spot there, you know, if you play just even decent hockey. So
yeah, it's going to be interesting to see who actually seizes that as the season goes on.
So is it the top five get the bye, Dowd? Refresh my memory here.
It's
yes. No. Yes.
6-11, 7-10, 8-9. Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
So
and then and then those five would have home ice in the next.
Well, the fifth wouldn't, but they wouldn't have to play.
That's true. Yeah.
Right.
So tidy, that little playoff system they have there. 11 team scheduling. It's great. All right, proving games weekend. We're looking at what, BU. We want to find out about BU. I want to watch. I want to see what's going on with Denver.
Yeah, I do too.
Yeah. Yale Union. Those are two clear favorites. I have been the last few years. Such
Michigan,
nice.
Michigan is at Miami.
Miami's got to get it going.
Yeah.
Ferris Lake State, Mercyhurst Air Force. A lot of games, a lot of good games this weekend. A lot of good ones.
You mentioned Yale and Union.
Yep.
Colorado College at Denver. Yep. That's a Saturday only.
Yes. Special engagement, one game only. So, all right. Good stuff. Deterioration? Anybody? Joe Frazier? He gone?
He gone. God bless him.
Yeah.
Joe Paterno? Looking for work?
Yes. Yes, he is fired.
Yeah, I don't
Do we have any score updates we want to do?
We did a score last time, and I can't remember what it was. Do you remember that?
I can't recall.
We tried to get Joe Paterno on the podcast and couldn't, so we got Mike Eidelbus as a special guest.
Yes.
Yeah, I told you I had to move a lot of stuff around.
That Penn State thing, man. Let's just not get into it.
Yeah.
I will say this, and somewhat hockey related. I just wonder about the residual effect on people like Guy Gadowski.
Yep.
You know, nothing of his doing. Long before he worked there, now he's got to go into kids' living rooms and talk to parents, and all they know about Penn State is this. If you know, especially if he continues to recruit Western Canada, like he did a lot at Princeton,
yeah,
and the Prairie Provinces, you know, that's tough on him.
You think Scott Sandlin's going to bed with a smile on his face tonight? Thinking, man, I like Duluth.
Yeah.
Wow.
No kidding.
What might have been?
Well, and it's not just, you know, you think about that from a recruiting aspect, but hockey has not been averse to similar scandals in the past.
Yeah, you're right.
Especially in Canada,
yeah.
You know.
Well, the two most notable, of course, Sheldon Kennedy and Theo Fleury.
That's right.
So, so best of luck to everyone in moving that hockey program forward in a positive way.
Yeah, and moving that university forward.
Yeah, it's gonna take a while for sure.
Yeah.
So, what else?
I think we should send some positive thoughts to Brandon Carney, the freshman from Michigan State. He was had a pretty serious neck injury in practice last week, and sounds like the prognosis for recovery is pretty good. But by accounts of his teammates, you know, he hasn't played in a game yet, but been you know, a good practice player, a good contributor to the team, and so best wishes to him.
Good call.
Yeah, he was. Freshman walk-on, and when did this happen? Last Wednesday or Thursday, maybe?
Yeah, Thursday, I believe.
Mid-late last week.
Yeah, and he slid into the boards in practice. And actually had a little update in the Lansing State Journal today. He broke his C1 and C2 vertebrae, I believe, in his back.
Yeah, that's where your vertebrae are.
Yeah. I guess those are the top ones.
Yes.
I think.
Yes.
I don't know. My wife's a physical therapist, and she explains all that stuff to me. She was actually, when she read it, she was like, he's lucky. He's A, walking, and B, alive.
Yeah, yeah.
Because those are two biggies right there. But it sounds like he's going to be okay. No word about, you know, his hockey future at this point in time, but I don't think that's really at the forefront, at least right now. Yeah. So.
I'm just impressed that the Lansing State Journal still has somebody to write about hockey.
Yeah.
I'm some days I'm impressed I get one delivered to my house. It's not a newspaper friendly environment out there right now.
No. They're going to move their delivery program to come on down and pick it up.
Yeah.
Well, you don't work too far from there.
No, I don't.
Wouldn't be too much of a burden.
No. No, I don't. I could pick it up on the... And I pick it up on the way in. Yeah. I did not see much of the LSU-Alabama game. And, you know, I've heard arguments from both... I'm assuming you guys maybe saw a heck of a lot more than I did.
I watched virtually all of it.
What were your thoughts?
Well, apparently the combined kicking of Brendan Gibbons and Seth Brookhisen at Michigan last year transferred to Alabama.
I was thinking Nick Saban sitting there in the sideline saying, man, I wish I could get Paul Ettinger back for a game. Very few people will that make sense to. So we'll send a shout out to those few people. Hey, Nate, what's up? Knock, knock. Nobody's biting. Damn.
No, those teams were pretty good.
Their defenses were far ahead of their offenses. LSU is in that position of if you have two starting quarterbacks, you have none.
Yeah.
Nick and Jefferson seemed to move the ball a little better.
Yeah, I don't understand why they even went with... Was it Lee? Is that the other guy?
Lee, yeah.
Yeah, Jefferson was much more effective.
Devin Gardner said, what do you mean?
I've just heard, you know, and again, I saw some of the fourth quarter and then the OT. And I just heard people saying, well, you know, you get one side that's saying it was a great game. You get the other side saying that was a terrible, boring game.
It depends what you like.
But I think that I think it doesn't matter who's out there. When you have defenses that are playing at that level, I mean, is the quarterbacking great? No. Are the offensives great? They're okay. They're not very consistent. But, you know, those defenses are otherworldly.
Yeah. You got to work for what you get.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, doesn't that part of why the offenses aren't good? I mean, there was no time to do anything. You know, you watch, they pitch out to the running back, you know, going strong side, and it's like he gets the ball in his hand, turns, and there's seven people swarming him. I mean, it's a far cry from the Big Ten, that's for sure.
Yeah. If you want offense, you can watch the MAC.
Yeah.
You can watch Toledo. Be a Toledo fan.
Yeah.
Go watch Houston.
That's another story that's not... To me, the biggest play in that game and the head-scratcher was... If you can't do much on offense, why are you letting your wide receiver throw a pass? You know, in scoring territory in a 6-3 game. You know, I just... That one was troubling to me. For the Bama side.
Do you want a Big Ten or do you want a score update from the MAC?
Love and Honor.
Love and Honor 21, Temple Owls 24.
Is that a final?
That is a final.
Yeah, I watched a little bit of that earlier.
From the link.
Yes, yes. Dozens of excited Temple football fans on hand.
Hey, they're bowl eligible again.
I do love that, and we've said this before, I love that those MAC schools are like, sure, you want to put us on ESPN? We'll play Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
Well, I'm thinking
there were two MAC games last night.
There were two last night, one tonight.
And is there one Friday?
I think there is. Syracuse and South Florida are Friday.
Oh, okay.
They could be in the MAC.
How about Toledo last night? 804 yards of offense.
Yeah.
That is ridiculous.
Plus, I want you to make the point you made to me. Remember that, what you wanted to say on the podcast?
Oh, yeah. I didn't. You know, we get from time to time, or all the time, emails from people and comments about, you know, how can you spend so much time talking about League A when League W is so much better, and you know that's where they play the
League W. You pick that note.
That's just a variable.
It's an algebra thing.
Yeah,
it's a placeholder.
It is. When League W is so much better, and that's the best hockey, and you know I don't know why you waste your time talking about these other leagues. I've gone to, oh my God, how many? I've been a ton of Division I, you know, big time, I guess what you'd call what? The BCS conferences or the major.
Right.
What do they call those?
BCS. BCS right. Conference games, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I guess you'd call that.
Just, you know, Tennessee, Michigan State, Notre Dame, Syracuse, everywhere. You know, yeah.
And, friend of ours down the street here in the Lansing area, son plays football for Ball State, and Ball State was at Eastern Michigan last week. I think it ended up something with 33-31. Ball State won on a last second, you know, field goal with 9 seconds left. I went to the game, got there about, you know, we got there about 10-15 minutes before kickoff. Tickets were $10, parked across the street from the stadium for free. You know, there was a decent crowd there for Eastern Michigan. I mean, they're the lowest average attendance in the nation, but I bet you they had maybe 10,000-12,000 there, which is a decent crowd for a MAC game for a noon kickoff on a Saturday. And yeah, I was entertained, and I think that's really all that matters. You know. And I know, you know, it kind of harkened back to me where we get these emails about, oh, that's not good hockey, or, you know, it's better here, or this is better than that. Well, you know what? If you're entertained, it's good. I mean,
it's what I always say, people, you know what? You like what you like.
Exactly.
And this is, I don't know what it is. I loved, when I lived a little closer to there, I loved going to games at Colgate. I mean, it is the most unremarkable rink in Division I hockey. And I just liked it, you know. It was just community, you know, sit close, see the game. Colgate was pretty good those years. You know, and it's also, I think, similar to what we were saying over the summer, you know, with all the conference shakeups, and Shane Frederick wrote, and I've always said, you're not going to watch the other team. You're going to watch your team.
Exactly.
So that, to me, is part of it as well. So.
So.
You sure you didn't like Colgate just because it was bringing you back to Slapshot memories?
No, that was... yeah, Kevin, you spent a lot of time at that rink.
Just a little bit.
How, is it what I said pretty accurate? The most unremarkable rink?
Yes.
In college hockey.
Without question.
Yeah. Certainly in the league.
By unremarkable, do you mean like nondescript?
Yeah, it's just plain. I mean, it's got an arched ceiling, you know, like an old field house feel. Press box on the end, somewhat common in the East.
Yeah.
Bleachers on one side, stadium seating on one side.
Bowling Green, I wouldn't
argue with you. Bowling Green.
Well, I've been to the BG Ice Arena, and
they do have a curling rink.
Colgate doesn't have much character. BG, at least you kind of feel like you're in a college rink. If it didn't say Colgate on the wall, you probably would have a hard time figuring out exactly where you were.
Saw Jesse Winchester on the old television tonight.
I was going to say Bowling Green is like a 1950s high school cafeteria.
they also have a Scott Hamilton banner on the wall.
Yeah, they do.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, they do. But they do have the curling sheet.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
That gives them bonus points right there.
That does.
You know what they also have? A national championship banner.
Yes. That is also true.
Who did they beat?
Does not.
Who did they beat?
It was the 20 overtime game, wasn't it?
Jeffs?
It was the 1984 championship game. They beat Minnesota Duluth in 4 overtimes in Lake Placid.
Oh. Yeah.
And a year ago, it would have bothered me to say that.
Jess, I mean, you're closer to it out there. What do you think when people say...
Before you say this, I want to add another point.
Okay, sure.
And we always talk about this, assuming we're staying on the same subject of, you know...
We're in the neighborhood.
Liking what you like.
Yeah.
You and I, Gladdy, always talk about, you know, or you'll say... What's one of the best hockey games you've ever been to? I say Oswego-Plattsburgh.
Yes.
And it was a good Division III game. There's no question about it. But the building was an old airplane hangar. Phenomenal crowd. And it's just, it was electric, and it really was almost a high school, you know, like a Texas high school football, you know, it was
homecoming. Just, yeah.
It was Roseau War Road.
Yeah.
It's exactly what it was. And, you know, were any of those guys going to play in the NHL? No. Weren't even going to play in the AHL, for that matter.
No. Nope.
Or the Coast, maybe one or two.
Maybe one guy in the Coast, yeah.
Yeah, maybe. But it was just, you know, it was entertaining.
It mattered.
It mattered, and it was entertaining.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess... Bus, that's maybe a little counter to my point, but just, I mean, I guess it's hard to get in that mindset, and maybe I'm just, wait for it, I think a little differently than some people sometimes, but, you know, like, I'm going to go to see the Atlanta Braves, you know, I love the Braves, and people are like, oh, who are they against? I'm like, I'm not going to watch who they're against. You know, does it mean a little more if they're playing, you know, the Phillies or the Mets than if they're playing the Padres or Astros? I guess so, but it's not going to stop me. You know, I just don't get the sense of, and if I'm a St. Cloud fan, you know, am I only going when they play Minnesota and North Dakota? Do I have to wait for Wisconsin to come? I mean, you know, I don't follow that, but I know a lot of people do. So. That's the part that I can't.
You know, Bus, to your point about, you know, liking what you like or appreciating, you know, the atmosphere and the effort, I contend that was one of the reasons the Minnesota North Stars failed, is that there was this perception that it wasn't well run and it wasn't full-out effort hockey. And at the time it was horrendously expensive. It was like $32 a ticket. You know, this was 1991. And people in Minnesota, as a general rule, said, why would I pay that much when I can go to a high school rink and pay $4 and see people putting every ounce of blood and guts on the ice and you know, that atmosphere and that effort? And, you know, and if you don't know the area, or, you know, I've had folks that have moved here to cover the NHL from other areas where all they've seen is NHL hockey, and they watch the college game and they go, ugh. They're slow, you know, it's no good. And this is, you know, watching Minnesota play Denver, you know, not slouch teams. you know, if that's all you're looking for, I guess then that's all you're looking for. But, you know, I think the true, you know, hockey fan, like you say, likes what they like and they appreciate what they appreciate.
Yeah. It is what it is. We're not going to change anybody's minds. We've learned that pretty quickly.
Yeah. If anything, we get them to think even stronger about their current in their current convictions. Yes.
We reinforce entrenchment.
Exactly. So I don't like new things.
Yeah. I can't think that way. That's not how it's always been.
That, you do bring up an interesting point, though, Gladdy, and we've talked about it here more times than I can even remember. The point of, are you going to see your team or are you going to see the other team? I mean, why are you going to the game as a fan of Team A? So.
Now, let me say this, though. As a, you know, if you're a Gopher fan, you're going to see the Gophers. And you don't necessarily care who they play. But it is a little bit more fun of an atmosphere when they're playing a North Dakota or a Wisconsin where you have a strong alumni base in the Twin Cities and you have a lot of visiting fans there. I mean, I just think it adds, you know, a little more to it when there's an audible cheer when the other team scores and it's like, hey, they're in our building. What are they doing here? There's that to it.
Yeah, that exists everywhere, you know.
Sure.
But, yeah, I don't know. There's no right and wrong. It's just something to throw out there. Last call, fellas. Anything else?
I got to do a quick shout out.
Go ahead.
On Friday afternoon, I was driving home from up in northern Minnesota where I hunt deer. And
You just stand in the woods.
I look for deer.
You were driving home on Friday?
No, I was driving home on Monday.
Oh, you said Friday. I was like, you were driving home from hunting and hunting season started on Saturday?
I apologize. My error on my part. I was driving home.
Snipey McPoacher.
Authorities, arrest this man.
I got two with the rental car. I was good.
It's all right.
It's our morality to report every crime against our guys.
That's right. I have my hockey-playing sons with me, so as a little treat to them, I texted Tom Ceratori, the coach of Bemidji State, and said, do you mind if I stop by and show my kids your new rink? I had seen the place, but they hadn't. And he said, yeah, absolutely, come by. And, you know, stop by the rink about noon, the Sanford Center in Bemidji, and Tom had gotten back the day before after their 12-hour bus ride home from Lake Superior State.
Jeez.
And, you know, greeted us at the door and showed us just kind of the entryway. And then he said, hey, I got to go start breaking down tape. You know, they've got, I can't remember who they play this weekend. Oh, they play Nebraska-Omaha this weekend, which is a good series because they own Omaha. Yes. Anyway, he says to me, here's the code for the locker room. Just take your kids in, show them anything you want. So
Midwestern hospitality.
We had a self-guided tour of the innards of the Sanford Center.
Nice.
Good. Yeah.
You didn't top shelf their toilet or anything, did you?
Come on.
I'm just saying.
Wow.
Doubt anything?
Nah.
He's not the best color man in
you
the
know
business
what?
For anything, folks.
Needs to send you more cocoa butter.
I do see deer around here. Maybe you're hunting the wrong place.
Do you really?
Yeah, there's they're not like whitetails like they have in Michigan, but they look pretty similar. Yeah.
They have those little mini deer like they have in the Florida Keys.
They're not, well, I don't know if I call them mini, but they're small. They're smaller than deer you see in Michigan, but they're not mini. Are there like mini deer in the Keys?
Yeah, the Keys they have, they're called key deer, and they're like the size of a poodle essentially.
Oh really? No. These are deer for sure.
That sounds like a lie.
I just googled it. There is something called a key deer.
Is anything like a key lime?
Pumpkin pie season is here, folks.
Have you ever had key deer pie?
There you go. 30 inches tall at a shoulder. So what's that like? Yeah, 2.5 feet.
Good job.
It's a Michigan man with Mathlick.
Yeah. Well, who does Michigan play this week in football?
A school that you'll need a lot of math to compute the final score if it's anything like last year, Illinois.
Oh, that's right, Illinois.
Although somebody on Illinois' defense has vowed never to give up 60 points again.
Well,
they should have vowed that last time.
I was going to say, especially when their offense scored 60 points and they lost.
That's a promise that they should be able to keep.
Did Michigan go for two when they were up by 25? Just curious. Because that's what the card says you're supposed to do.
Yeah. Oh, and that was a touchdown that Hemingway caught last weekend.
No, it wasn't.
My God, he caught it in bounds.
He didn't catch it. The ground caught it.
He caught it and then touched the ground. Oh, my God. I would love to see B.J. Cunningham do the same thing this weekend, and we'll talk about that.
B.J. Cunningham can catch the first time. He doesn't need the ground.
That's true. I'll give you that.
except
he folds like a house of cards.
Except against Nebraska.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah. His one target, one drop.
I got another shout out.
I'm expecting
Brother Rice beating Harrison in football last weekend.
Oh yeah.
Easy.
Harrison on the road.
They didn't beat him, did they? They kind of walloped him. Wasn't it a big
30-7. Lone touchdown from your guy Gladdy, Michigan State recruit Aaron Burbridge.
Burbridge, man, the future.
The guy without the grades to get into Michigan.
Well, I'm expecting big things from the Wolverine this weekend because it's probably going to be Grey Cup weather out there in Iowa City, and it should suit Denard Robinson just fine.
The college where I work is playing its annual rivalry game, and not a good matchup for the old Division III Ithaca Bombers. But the one area we match up quite well in is special teams. Kick and punt returns, field goals, punting, all categories. So I'm trying to see if we can get Canadian rules in force and only play three downs. That would help the Bombers.
Good luck with that. Blue Bombers?
No, just Bombers.
You playing in Winnipeg?
Yeah.
New stadium?
Is Dieter Brock your quarterback?
No.
Buster Rhymes playing there?
Kevin, very pleased to let you know I did grab the puck from your first career podcast. So
hey, I appreciate that.
Put some tape around it.
Gotta put some tape around it. Get that in the mail to Kevin.
The guy set me up real well on that one, so I just had to stand right there in the back door and knock that one in.
It was a great play by my line mates.
That's right.
They did all the work. I just tried to get a shot off and fortunately winning. Perfect.
They make me look good. It's good.
Perfect.
Like the old Mike Sturdish line, he only scored one career college goal and he still has the shin pad he scored it with.
Exactly.
That is classic.
Hey, who's going to be the one to go and go to the Golden Corral and tell Albert Hainsworth he has to go report to Bucks camp?
Golden Corral callback.
You go home now.
Seriously, is somebody really giving him another shot?
Yeah, you can't teach size.
That's right.
And you can't teach Albert Hainsworth either.
Well, he's...
He's got a touch of the dumb, I think.
Wow.
Don't I'll say that him. To his face.
I think we should give him more respect. Maybe at the Frozen Four, we can have a drunken attempt at trying to do the Hainsworth conditioning test that the Redskins gave him.
Oh, jeez.
He'll be in Tampa. Maybe he can judge it. Yeah, Albert Hainsworth, if you're listening to the Inch podcast and you got a problem with what I said, take it up with me in April.
I'm coming in your kitchen, buddy.
Maybe we can get...
you better look out, pal.
Who's the guy from the Dolphins? Vontae Davis? Is that his name?
He's the guy from Illinois. He went to Illinois. He's on
Is he a dolphin?
He's the one that's dolphin.
He's not a dolphin.
No.
Ixnay.
Stop sign.
We thought we got all that out of our system when we got rid of the old Hockey East guy.
That's why we had to fire Joe Howe.
Joe Howe.
You can't remember his name.
I'm getting him mixed up with my college goalie. Sorry.
I miss old what's his name.
I meant Jim.
isn't Vontae Davis the guy from the Dolphins who supposedly showed up to practice like drunk?
Yes. I never heard that story.
Yeah, it just happened last week, and then he got in a fight with Brandon Marshall.
It says he was late and hungover at Saturday practice.
See, he wasn't drunk.
Well, he did have a smell of alcohol, they say.
Yeah. How many Monday college hockey practices have that familiar odor? All right, fellas.
Monday college hockey practice is brought to you by Gong Show Gear.
Yeah, exactly. Thanks to everyone. Thanks for listening to the Inch Podcast. I guess I didn't timestamp this. Recorded Wednesday, November 9th, 2011. For Kevin Zeese, James V. Dowd, Jess Myers, special guest Mike Idlebus, this is Joe Gladyszewski, and this has been the Inch Podcast.